All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Jack Roten, and I work in Andrew J.H.'s AMO lab, Atomic Molecular Optical Physics. And I'm going to be talking to you today about stable lasers for precise control of radium ions. So first off, I'd like to talk to you about the process of trapping ions and also display for you the precursor to our radium ion, strontium. This is a chain of strontium ions. And an interesting little fact about these is that they're about 30 microns apart. And so our methods of trapping these ions is with a linear pole ion trap, in which we use, or the linear pole ion trap produces dynamic electric fields in the form of a saddle potential, which essentially flaps back and forth and localizing our ions in a single location. And we are, with this ion trap, we're capable of trapping almost anything from electrons to dust particles. Of course, we would rather trap ions. That's more interesting to study. So getting on to radium. Radium is the heaviest alkali or earth alkali earth metal, and it displays some interesting nuclear properties, such as it has a heavy mass and it has an intrinsic octupole deformation. And this is exotic compared to many of the other group 2 ions, which have rugby-shaped quadrupole deformations or spherically shaped nucleus. And so another interesting component property of our radium ion is that it has a neutron skin that surrounds the nucleus. And this nucleus, the neutron skin can tell us, it has a correlation to neutron stars, in which if we study the neutron skin properties, we may be able to learn more about the equation of state of our neutron stars. And so these are our long-term goals. These are the big picture of what we're doing. But first, the work I've been working on is in stabilizing lasers. And so we must first, as well as we must first learn the electronic structure of radium. And radium itself is an ion that has been, hasn't been studied very much in terms of its electronic structure or nuclear structure for that matter. And so first we must learn how to laser cool or Doppler cool our radium ion. And I'm essentially working on stabilizing our lasers to work with this very difficult cooling operation. So to cool our ion, it sits in a gas chamber, and it's flying around at a very high velocity. And so in order to cool these down, in order to localize them, we must induce a radiative, we must induce a laser field. And so the resonant frequency, or the frequency with which we will be able to laser cool radium, is at 468 nanometers. And this will allow us to, the ion will absorb this wavelength and also emit this wavelength, essentially cooling it down, kicking out kinetic energy and allowing us to hold it in the trap for long times. And we also need a stable repump laser, or 1079 nanometers, to get it out of a forbidden state, which is the D state. And so we need to have this to, we need this because the D state is a forbidden state which doesn't allow spontaneous emission back to the S state. And here is a picture of our radium ion. We are capable of trapping it and imaging it with a camera. And so the work I'm working on is in laser stabilization, labor stabilization with a Fabry-Perot interferometer. And this is in use in conjunction with a pound driver Hall lock circuit. And so essentially what we have here is a glass spacer in which two mirrors sit on, and this mirror on the right has two countercompensating piezos, which allow us to actuate the mirror back and forth to lengthen or shorten the cavity. And what this does, as well as stabilizing the laser system to a high degree, it allows us to tune the frequency outputted by this Fabry-Perot interferometer. And we can think of the laser light inside as a standing wave in which it outputs a single frequency. And so here's a little animation of us showing that we can expand the length of the cavity and output a slightly different wavelength. And so the properties of our Fabry-Perot interferometer is that it has a full free spectral range of about 1.5 gigahertz, and this allows us a very fine tuning range in which to find the resonant transitions of our radium ion. And once we are with scanning the Fabry-Perot interferometer, we're able to move our peak, essentially, in frequency space in order to find that transition. And so here is the build, essentially, coming up here. So that right there is the piezo and mirror assembly, and it is also So this is what we put on our glass spacer, this ULE glass spacer, and this is a very painstaking, lengthy process, but it is well worth it in the end. And so this glass spacer, well, it's not really enough, so we need more. We need a better way to stabilize our Fabry-Perot interferometer. So what we do is we put it in an inner heat shield, a heat shield which protects it against fluctuations of our environment, or thermal fluctuations from our lab environment. And then we place that inside of a vacuum chamber, which will allow further, thermal insulation and sound insulation. Then next, that's not good enough yet. And so then we put that into an outer heat shield box, and this little these little black plates here are the outside panels in which we also layer in insulation in between those, foam insulation for also more acoustic and thermal stability. And here is a small little rendition of what the cavity essentially looks like. And there is the actual thing over to the left. And so the pound PDH lock, the pound driver Hall lock, is essentially a feedback control loop for our laser systems, in which we shine a laser light into the cavity, and light is reflected out of the cavity, and that reflected light goes to a photodiode, and it goes to a mixer, and this mixer takes in the modulated signal from both the cavity and the laser, and it mixes them and creates an error signal with which our PDH, our PID box is able to compare that error signal to the laser and essentially keep it locked or maintained at a specific wavelength. So our next steps with radium is that we want to continue to be able to trap radium with a long lifetime. And we will be, in the near future, measuring the lifetime and branching ratios of the ion. The lifetime being the amount of time it takes for the P to S state to decay, the electron from the P to S to decay in that time. And the branching ratio is essentially a fraction in which the electron decays to either the S or the D. And so these are unknown measurements currently, and these are measurements that are well known for all other group 2 ions. So we're really on the cutting edge here with this work. So I'd like to acknowledge My lab team, Professor Andrew Jaich and Craig Holloman, as well as the rest of the team. And thank you very much. And
I have a question to start off with. So you had this diagram where you had this full width half max of 200 kilohertz, I believe. What type of precision are you hoping to achieve? What type of stabilization are you hoping to achieve?
So we're looking to get stabilization in terms of, so our lasers drift essentially over a period of time due to small fluctuations in heat. And so we're looking to get the number for that I don't have currently, but the full width of half max is, that's actually the resonant frequency, which in the cavity. So that would be not so much, wouldn't have so much to do with the long time drift rates, but it'd have more so to do with the performance of the cavity. Does that
I think so, yeah. Could you go back to the slide with the neutron skin?
Oh, sure.
Could you just talk a tiny bit about what neutron skin is, but mostly I want to know what nuclear pasta is?
Oh, yeah. I knew that would come up. So so neutron skin is a layer of neutral matter on top of a nucleus, which is mixed with protons and neutrons. And so, yeah, does that answer your question on neutron skin?
Yes.
And so for the neutron star, let's see, I actually had a little bit on that. Let's see, so, nuclear pasta. So.
Are you sure nuclear pasta is a real thing?
So, interestingly, I wish I put a picture of nuclear pasta on here, but there are different forms of nuclear pasta, such as lasagna, I'm not kidding you, spaghetti, and several others, but it's essentially it's essentially the point at which the nuclear matter in that region. So this should be in between the inner crust and core. So it's a very thin layer within the neutron star, and so it's kind of a point where the nuclear forces are breaking down and creating these odd structures that look like nuclear pasta. So.
I have one more question. Sure. What when you were designing the system, what sort of technical details were you looking at with your piezos that you were choosing?
So technical details, well, we wanted them to be able to actuate at about a micrometer, for example, for a voltage of about 400 volts. And so, does that answer your question?
Yes. Okay. Any other questions?
Let's thank our speaker again.